And good morning, everyone. Welcome to Northern Arc Capital Q1 FY25 earnings call. On behalf of ICICI Securities, I would like to thank Northern Arc management team for giving us the opportunity to host this call. Today, we have with us the entire top management team of Northern Arc, represented by Mr. Ashish Mehrotra, Managing Director and CEO, Mr. Atul Tibrewal, CFO, Mr. Partha Sarthi, Group Risk Officer and Governance Head, and Mr. Chetan Parmar, Head Investor Relations. I will now hand over the call to Mr. Ashish for his opening remarks, and then we'll open the floor for Q&A. Over to you, sir.
Hey, thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us in our first earning calls. Really delighted. Before we begin, just want to thank all the stakeholders and all of you for ensuring a terrific listing both at NSE and BSE, which happened last week on September 24th. Let me quickly spend a couple of minutes talking about myself and then talking about what really drives us at Northern Arc and what's our mission and purpose and how do we see this going forward. I began my career in the mid-90s with Citi. I worked with Citibank India across functions, spent about 22 years with them, and large part of my career was essentially in building and running the lending businesses, both on the retail side and on the commercial side. Obviously, towards the later part, I was running the retail bank franchise for Citi in India, subsequent to which moved to run an insurance, being very focused on India. While I did a couple of stint offshore, ran an insurance company, found an exit for the Indian promoters, and as we were on the cusp of doing other stuff, and that's when the conversation with Northern Arc started about 4 years ago. And what really excited me about Northern Arc is that how a company like Northern Arc brings its purpose to life and impacts millions and millions of people. And that's really what joins us at HIP across the management team to ensure we are able to contribute effectively and in a commercially viable manner, thereby adding value to all the stakeholders and the network in which we operate. I also want to take this opportunity to thank Jay Kumar, P.S. Jay Kumar, who's the chair, non-exec chairperson of the board, and all our shareholders and the management team and the entire Northern Arc family. It's been a terrific journey over the last many years. Northern Arc was established about 15 years ago with Envision, which is simple yet pretty profound, to be a trusted platform that enables flow of finance or flow of credit from capital providers to users in a reliable, efficient, and a responsible manner. And we want to be conduit that ensures the financial resources seamlessly flow into the sectors through our mission, enabling the access to finance for the underserved in an efficient, scalable, and reliable manner, and which I hold very dear to my heart. Retail credit in India is grossly underserved, and businesses like ours, which follow a multi-channel strategy, not only bring our might in lending, but also providing credit solution to our originating partners, providing investment opportunities to investing partners, and more importantly, also running through our funds, which enables us to deliver our knowledge, our capabilities to provide investment solutions, and the money flows into the sectors where we operate. As a managing director, as the head of Northern Arc, as a Pratham Sevak, I think my core objective is to make Northern Arc the most preferred financial service provider for all the stakeholders. Whether you are an investor, a partner, or a lender, or a borrower, I truly believe that we have the right platform, the right team, more importantly, the right mindset. Mindset which is trained and highly eager to learn, and having a growth mindset that is part of our core of our culture. And I keep on saying that every day, every minute, the numbers of loans, the credit which flows through our pipe, as long as we get to learn from it, we will be many, many steps ahead of all our of all the players in the market. This ensures that we are able to use this knowledge to address the needs of individual and the small businesses. Correct. I also want to take this opportunity to talk about three of my colleagues who are here. One, Atul Tibrewal, who's a CFO, whose sharp business acumen keeps us physically robust, strong liability franchise is what he has built, a great partner. Our second our group risk head and the governance head, Partha Sarthi, who ensures that we navigate through the risk like a seasoned sailor in troubled waters. And you know, obviously, we've seen many of them through last decade and a half of a journey, and ensure that we have strong governance, what really is key for a financial services business. I'm also joined by Chetan Parmar, who's our investor relationship head, and Jigar Seta, who's our strategy team, coupled with Chinmay, who's part of the strategy in the CEO's office. All of them are fairly seasoned, but more importantly, all of us in the larger family of Northern Arc is joined at the hip. And we will talk about the larger family and the other senior leadership as we go further, because we bring purpose to life. What really makes us unique and truly strong is just beyond people. It's a culture that we've cultivated here at Northern Arc, built by all the people, including people when this idea was conceptualized 15 years ago, built on the principle of collaboration, innovation, integrity, and transparency. Excellence is non-negotiable, no compromises. I often tell my team that we can recover from a bad quarter, but we cannot recover from a bad reputation, and we must follow the look at everything on a first principle basis and do it right, keep our clients, our investors, our borrowers, our lenders on the center of plate in what we do, and ensure that we add value through the process. You know, looking at India, let's spend a couple of minutes. Very robust GDP growth rate, surged by, obviously led by consumption, government spend in infrastructure, and more importantly, strong technology capabilities, which we've tech stack, which we have built, coupled with rising disposable income across urban and rural India, and the growing middle class. The shift in consumer preferences towards premium and discretionary products, along with rise of e-commerce digital platform, is pushing the economy forward. And we believe convenience of digital like UPI has also brought more consumers into the formal economy. And you look at the numbers with regards to look at UPI transaction of over 20 lakh crores monthly, or the massive increase in the GST acceptance, that's ensuring that the flow of credit is happening at about 14% growth. And that's really core to ensure for us to help realize the Prime Minister dream of Viksit Bharat. Let us remember the importance of collaboration, innovation in ensuring that we better shape future for people in India and take this country to its rightful place. At a business model, we're proud to play a pivotal role in this narrative of ensuring flow of money to underserved from people who have access to have money. Like I alluded earlier, Northern Arc at its core is a diversified financial services business, catering to the retail credit requirement of underserved household and businesses in India across our focus sectors. We predominantly focused on the six sectors. One is MSME, what we known as micro, small, and medium enterprises. The second is the micro enterprises or the microfinance customers. Third is consumer finance, essentially addressing the needs of urban poor. The vehicle finance, predominantly the two-wheeler and commercial vehicles, and affordable housing, followed with the agricultural supply chain. Over the last 15 years, the company's approach has been to create a differentiated and a comprehensive play in the retail credit ecosystem in India, spread across these sectors by essentially facilitating credit to the end customer through a multi-channel approach, what like I said earlier. And I want to spend a couple of minutes talking about the multi-channel approach. We lend, i.e. we lend both to the end customers directly and also through our intermediary partners for them to on-lend. But core to our thesis is the end customers operating in the six sectors. We also use this opportunity as we work with other players to find credit solutions from them. Probably some of our most innovative product is PERSAC, MUSAC, and which is multi-party originator and a perpetual securitization product. and that ensures that we are able to provide credit solutions to our intermediate financing partners or originating partners. We also, 9 years ago, started this journey to deliver our knowledge on this sector, our data capabilities, our tech, to invest through our funds business, which is AIF and PMS. We've run about 10 funds so far. All of them have performed well. 5 of them have closed, and we've returned the money. So we provide AIF and PMS portfolio management. So essentially, we not only bring our own lending balance sheet might, we bring our knowledge and our network to provide credit solution to our originating partners more often more than the size of our balance sheet itself, and also look at the right set of opportunity, looking at thematic funds we are running for us to participate and invest through the funds. All of this essentially going towards financing the retail credit need to fuel the growth in a responsible manner. As Indian economy is on rise, Northern Arc is here to make sure that no one is left behind. As a result, we've successfully facilitated credit financing of more than 1.8 trillion INR and have impacted over 101 million lives of individual households since inception, which is genuinely something to be proud of. This is what really drives us 24/7 as we bring our work to play and bring purpose to life. Enabling credit financing to this size and scale has been possible only on account of the following. One, our obsession to learn from the data which flows through us, and more importantly, to have a technology capability to ensure the flow of that information, the flow of those loans. We build our own proprietary scorecards by leveraging our data and our domain knowledge. We've run 30-plus proprietary scorecards. So far, we've also built a scorecard which are allowing other investors and originator to leverage called NeoScore, essentially helping them answer simple yet the most difficult 4 questions in the lending business, i.e. whom to lend, second, how much to lend, third, what price to lend. In case you take those decisions, what will be the probability of default for you to get the right set of risk-adjusted return? We've also built our own tech platform. Out of the 1.8 trillion we financed, close to a trillion would have been financed on a platform called Nimbus, which ensures the between the originators and the investors, the seamless flow of credit happens. We run another very powerful platform, which we started many years ago, called Nimbus Partner Origination System, where multiple partners can plug in and we can finance their end customers by enabling real-time underwriting, real-time KYC, real-time attestation, real-time penny drop, real-time dispersal, and real-time communication with hundreds and thousands of customers. We, on any given day, underwrite anywhere between 20 to 25,000 loans a day using that platform. One of the unique things which I said is the company is deeply obsessed to ensure that we learn. We now learn not only from our experience, but also experience what we see around. We created a platform about a couple of years ago called Altifi, essentially with an objective to democratize the securities we have on our balance sheet. And we're seeing large amount of retail participation in that platform. So you can all go into altifi.ai, download an app, and can participate in high-quality performing credit. Given we spoke about sectoral and we spoke about our knowledge and our approach, maybe let me take a couple of minutes to talk to you about our competitive moats and how do we manage to facilitate retail credit across these sectors. I think the first and foremost is that domain sectoral expertise is one of the most critical competitive moat for us. Over the years, we have developed deep expertise in financing underserved household and businesses. This knowledge gives us strong competitive edge and allows us to understand and meet the credit-specific need of these customers at the end customers. Like I said earlier, our core thesis is built around the customer at the very end, who's going to use that money, to whom the money is going to flow, and how that money will flow. That gives us a unique ability to evaluate risk, opportunity in sizing the sector, and sets us apart from other players. Strengthen our position as a trusted financial partner. For starter, let me talk to you about three sectors, particularly MSME. MSME sector continues to be cornerstone of Indian economy, contributes about 30% of GDP and 40% of exports, employs 60% of employment. Government initiatives like emergency credit line and all have worked to enabling flow of credit. The sector is growing at about 29% year on year, increase in commercial credit demand. The other, and you know, we still haven't touched the large part of them are still unserved or underserved. The unsecured MSME also witnessed a sharp growth over the last 2 years. We started observing some bit of increase in delinquencies over the last 2 quarters, which could persist to my mind over the next 2 quarters. However, we expect to see the adjustment in pricing of loan to reflect the inherent risk. Nonetheless, demand of credit from MSME remains robust and the sector remain key focus area, and we do both secured and unsecured, predominantly secured through our own branch network and unsecured through our partners by leveraging the RBI DLG guidelines and having an FLDG to offset. The second sector where we operate is the microfinance, which is where we began a journey 15 years ago. We offer microfinance loan to underserved individuals either directly through our own dedicated rural finance subsidiary called Pragati, which where we have close to 300 branch network. And we also work with other partners in essentially non-bank NBFC MFIs. Our primary focus in microfinance is the joint liability group and the lending format, where the borrowers from the form a group and share responsibility for each other's loan repayment in case of default, provide some amount of social collateral. Since the last couple of years, the industry has observed exuberant participation in sector post-relaxation of lending norms by RBI, leading to over, to my mind, could be leading to some bit of over-leveraging and increase in indebtedness at a small cohort level of borrowers in select pocket. Additionally, maybe social political disruption with loan waiver, the calamities like heat wave, etc., in some areas like Punjab, Assam, Haryana, could have added to a little bit of stress on the portfolio. At Nardanak, we've been pioneers in facilitating credit to the sectors over the last 14 years and have navigated multiple challenges through the journey. And if you look at it over the last 10 years, you know, our net credit cost would have been less than, you know, 35 basis points. We do not expect any additional stress in our own lending portfolios, as our MFI borrowers are adequately capitalized when we work with NBFC MFIs to tide over the current downturn. In our own direct book, we've consciously slowed down disbursal, focused extensively on borrower selection and strengthening of our collection and recovery process. We've also increased provision on a book in anticipation of potential stress which could happen, and I will talk about it as we go further. In consumer finance, market in India is pretty large and robust, largely driven by increase in disposable income and increase in consumption, which is no different than the largest contributor to GDP at 62% plus. The sector has immensely benefited from digital lending innovation and growing penetration of financial products in semi-urban and rural areas, coupled with the urbanization at about 30%. That's why when I spoke about urban poor, I kind of specifically stressed on it. The demand for unsecured loans has exhibited an annual growth of over 25% post-pandemic by, and actually fueled by, fintech revolution, which essentially enabled the flow of smaller quantum of credit to be delivered at an economically viable way. A large part of growth is driven by small ticket and short tenor loans for the first-time borrower. In unsecured personal loan segment, there has been conscious shift towards the better selection of the borrowers, longer tenor, and shift away from small ticket loans. To my mind, that will ensure that over a period of time, the performance in this sector improves. Additionally, we've consciously shifted towards cash flow assessment and borrower rather than solely based on the bureau or the scores. So we're a combination of testing income and looking at the performance, including our own scorecards. We also, for majority of our consumer finance portfolio, source through partners, like I said, leveraging the DLG guidelines to provide FLDG, and that ensures that our risk-adjusted return remain top quartile in it. The second most important competitive moats is what I call as a network effect or a flywheel. It's a strong distribution network that we built over the last 15 years. We've enabled robust distribution covering, working with over 343, with our own 340-plus branch network and our own 50-plus lending partners, coupled with 340-plus originating partners and 1,000-plus investing partners. This extensive network enables us to effectively reach about 670-plus districts across India, i.e. covering over 80% of India's geography footprint. This large and growing community of originating partners, lending partners, and investors, coupled with our track record in diversified product offering and proprietary tech stack, has resulted in expansion in our opportunities for debt raising and investment. This helps us in accessing the large pool of liquidity, serve wider classes of investors, and meet varied investment requirements. This generates an annuity effect, providing us a combination of fee income and interest income. Accordingly, this creates a positive network effect, which is scalable and pretty well diversified and very, very robust. So if you look at a flywheel between the originating partners and the investing partners, you will see people moving on both sides of the curve, essentially looking at the demand for credit and the investment in credit coming in between the investors, banks, and participants. And we use the same knowledge, domain knowledge, data science, risk principles, and everything follows the same risk principles and shows that all these stakeholders get benefited with the Northern Arc domain knowledge and strong risk framework. I think important to talk about is that risk management is core of our business. We've developed a tailored system that is customized for each of our sector's channel we operate in. Leveraging expertise and data, we create proprietary risk model that enhances our capital efficiency and helps us build a diversified portfolio. We also parallelly build very strong collection infrastructure using variety of tools for pre-due calling, reminder, follow-up, and so on and so forth, coupled with strong legal measures to ensure we are able to recover and have a strong performance on our portfolio. To my mind, technology plays a critical role in proactive approach to collection, with deep data analytics helps us to identify early signs of delinquency and ensure that we are adequately capacitized and we are the first one to reach the end customer. As a result, our industry-leading GNPAs, quarter one is about 47 basis point, a net NPA of 12 basis point. Reflects our solid foundation, strength of our four pillars of strategy, position as the top-tier digitally-enabled customer-centric financier on a sustainable growth journey. I think another important big differentiation, we spoke about domain knowledge, we spoke about data science capability, we spoke about risk, is our ability to build our bespoke technology to enable flow of so much of credit and impacting so many lives. This essentially powers, we spoke about Nimbus, it's heart of our technology infrastructure. It enables end-to-end digital integration across our partners, ensuring smooth operation from loan origination till servicing or till sunset, either on our balance sheet or on other investors' balance sheet. So that's the power of that platform. The NPOS further enhances this, providing a comprehensive digital point-of-sale solution, allowing our partners to onboard customers quickly and efficiently. And like I said earlier, it works 24/7 end-to-end, providing across the asset classes where we operate. AltiFi is our, again, cloud-based marketplace platform, connect institutional investors and individual investors who like to participate in the fixed income piece. We spoke about MuseScore, which is another piece of our commitment to our originating partners and our investors to use our domain knowledge, our risk expertise, to bring their risk policy at play. I think for a lending institution, nothing more important apart from all of this is the strong liability franchise. As companies like us who bring purpose to play tends to create a very unique proposition, which not only reflects in consistency of performance and, more importantly, very large network effects, but also which reflects on our liability franchise. We maintain a pretty well-diversified funding profile underpinned by a established relationship with our lenders and investors and proactively manage liquidity and strong credit rating. If you look at it, and I'm sure my colleague will talk about it further, but 30% of our borrowing comes from DFIs, largely both domestic and global multilateral. We are the first port of call for global multilateral to participate in India's story, and that creates a very unique proposition for us. Last year, our credit rating was also upgraded to AA- by ICRA. I think that talks about the before the fundraise and equity infusion. That means just purely basis performance. I think very few companies would have got rating upgrade. We were one of those last year. Other important piece for us is to how do we look at our third line lending placement business and the fund management business, where we use, which is core to our lending business, and focus in building a fund management. We began this in 2014, close to say about 10 years ago, in expanding long-term strategy to goal to scale this business and to ensure we provide enough investment opportunities for people to participate through AIF and PMS. We've run 10 funds so far in two PMS schemes. We are also high quality that some of our large investors wants us to run a managed fund. One of the funds we've launched early last quarter of Q1 is the GMOs, which is investing essentially in the financial services. We are right now deploying towards the emerging business fund. And then we've got three more funds in pipeline. I think the core of us is not only the economic capital, but also the human capital, which is essentially the culture of the company. We believe in creative, inclusive, and collaborative workplace where integrity and transparency are paramount. Our commitment to employees has been recognized through our inclusion in Great Places to Work for the last four consecutive years. And recognition reflects our ongoing efforts to foster a culture where our people feel valued, empowered to contribute to our mission and bringing the purpose to life. We've also, over the course of last 2 years, have significantly enhanced the management team and added more talent to build stronger compliance network, building talent for the retail portfolios, and so on and so forth. So we've added, we've been proactive in adding required set of talent a couple of years ago to ensure as we go about growing. Quickly summarizing, I think we built a solid track record of consistent and resilient performance, not only over the last 3 years. We've been debt listed for the last 10 years. So look at our performance. It'll speak the same language of consistent and resilient quarter on quarter, year after year, both in our business operations and financial results, despite navigating through various economic cycles and challenges. Our balance sheet has grown at a healthy rate of over 30%. We've ended at about 11,869 crores in June 24, with a focus on sectoral diversification, maintaining the granular portfolio of intermediate retail and direct to customers of about 48 to 52%. You know, fair to say, as Rome wasn't built in a day, building a successful franchise requires a methodical approach and obsession to do better what you did yesterday. Step by step, will be the key focus areas over the next few years. Our disciplined risk management has allowed us to maintain industry-leading asset quality even in the challenging times. Our gross NPA stands at less than 50 basis points, significantly outperforming industry averages by about 2 to 3 times. With respect to credit cost, we remain extremely watchful across our portfolios. Based on data we've already shared, we started to proactively prune segments. We've started to cut exposure in segments where we see forward-looking losses. We built strong collection capabilities. Our credit cost in Q1 was primarily driven by good book provisioning, i.e. Stage 1, 2, NECL further, microfinance growth and delinquency stabilizes. We feel the better over, given that we had a good monsoon over the next 2 quarters, it should stabilize. We continue to have first principle approach to consumer finance and leverage our modeling capability to provide strong collection practices in MSME lending, both secured and unsecured. We've been able to contain credit costs within the acceptable range, and the profitability indices in ROA and ROE are even better than last year, as you see our results, which Atul will talk about. We have achieved most profitable quarter in the history of Northern Arc in terms of absolute profit with infusion of equity, which happened in April from IFC and other lenders. I think looking ahead, our Q2 performance as we sit here on 1st of October, I'd like to offer some guidance. I think while audited results will be released over the next few quarters, or next few weeks, during the next earning calls, I'm confident a balance sheet will align and grow, will grow faster than the industry growth rate. Our credit cost should remain consistent in line with our proactive approach in managing risk. And we remain cautious about potential impact of macroeconomic factors on the borrower repayment. Overall, we are pretty clear that we should be able to hold and build on what we've been doing. A strong diversification across portfolio to navigate through this pressure. Additionally, with the infusion of 500 crores of primary capital through IPO will provide more momentum for growth and profitability. I think I just want to thank you all, and we can for your time, and thank you for to give you a comprehensive update of this. I will request my colleague Atul to talk about financials, and then both Atul, me, and Parda are here to answer questions. Atul, over to you.
Yeah, thank you, Ashish. Thank you all for joining Northern Arc's first earning call. Now, without further ado, let's dive into the financial performance of the company. As on June 2024, our assets under management reached 11,869 crores, marking a robust year-on-year growth of 32% and a quarter-on-quarter increase of 2%. Our AUM mix reflects a 52% contribution from direct to customer and 48% from the intermediate retail business. We maintain a very diversified portfolio across the six focus sectors. Our net revenue, including fees and other income, reached 297 crores in quarter one, reflecting a 40% year-on-year growth and a 12% increase quarter-on-quarter. Fees and other income on a DuPont basis has remained range-bound at 0.8% of the average total assets. However, basis the seasonality of the business, wherein the fee-driven volumes increases every quarter of the financial year, we believe the same would reach FY24 levels of 1%. Despite the rise in the risk weight of NBFC exposure and high interest rate environment that existed last year, we have successfully maintained a stable cost of borrowing at close to 9.3%, both quarter-on-quarter as well as year-on-year. This stability reflects our proactive treasury management and diversified lender franchise, which carefully balances the cost of fund with liquidity and ALM. Additionally, we have significantly progressed in strengthening our balance sheet, with our debt-equity ratio improving from 3.9x last year to 3.2x this quarter. We have achieved a very robust growth in our pre-provisioning operating profit, up 43% year-on-year and 26% quarter-on-quarter, reaching 174 crores. This strong performance is a result of significant productivity improvements fueled by technology enhancements that has driven greater operational efficiency. Talking further about liquidity, we remain very comfortable with positive cumulative mismatch across all the time buckets. Our total borrowings at the end of the quarter stood at 8,971 crores, with approximately 65% tied to variable interest rate. So this position serves favorably to benefit from the anticipated lower interest rate environment in the future. We continue to demonstrate a very strong asset quality, with GNPA at 0.47% in Q1 from 0.49% in Q1 of last year, and net NPA reducing to 0.12% over the same period. Recognizing the ongoing stress in the MFI industry, we have strategically moderated our direct microfinance business in Q1. Credit cost in quarter one is rupees 51 crores, which denotes 1.7% of the average total assets, and this includes a 60 basis impact of the change in the ECL methodology. The same resulted in an increase in the profitability probability of default in our direct to consumer customer portfolio. Since this change, our credit cost has improved from 1.4% in June 23 to 1.1% in the current quarter. We focus on continuously improving our risk framework. As Ashish earlier mentioned, we will continue to invest into building a robust collection framework with manpower, technology to ensure strong gatekeeping throughout the credit life cycles. Turning to profitability, our PAT for the quarter saw a robust increase of 43% year-on-year and a solid 4% growth quarter-on-quarter, reaching 93 crores. This marks the most profitable quarter to date. Capital adequacy continues to be very strong, well above the regulatory requirements, with capital adequacy standing at 21.5%. So thank you so much, and I would now like to open the floor for question and answers.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Our first question is from the line of Vivek Ramakrishnan with DSP Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Congratulations. Good afternoon. My question is on the microfinance business. Your numbers are very, very good. Is it partly because of design or partly because you are not in the areas where people got a higher level of NPAs? And then a related question for the management in terms of strategy, because you spoke about growth as well. How would you be able to manage growth as well as maintain quality? Is it because of a diversified book that allows you to do that, or how is the strategy going forward? Thank you.
Hey, thank you very much. Pretty interesting question. I think a combination of performance in MFI is a function of how do we deliver our deep domain knowledge, our tested risk model. More importantly, we've said this many times, what really sets us apart is the touch and feel of the ground. I didn't speak about it earlier, but let me take a minute. The way our philosophy is designed towards providing the solution to the end customer is, and whether the loan is originated by us or originated through a partner, we actually touch 35% of the network where a portfolio is spread by physically going and meeting in the deep rural areas which we select on a pretty scientific basis to cover 35% of a portfolio. How the loans are being originated, how the loans are being underwritten, how the loans are being serviced, not only when we go to the branch and pull out the loan tapes, but also meet the end customer. That means you have a head start of what is happening in that particular branch, in that particular rural area, in that particular district, and if you are able to use that learning along with your time-tested risk model, you will by and large be ahead of the curve before somebody sees an outcome of that in their financial over the couple of quarters. So I think that's the one part. The second part of it, because we work with both NBFC MFI and our own direct experience, we are able to share this knowledge with both our originating partners, which means NBFC MFI and our own portfolio, and that's the reason why you see the credit outcomes the way they are. The second part of the question is on growth. I think the power of diversification allows you to dial up and dial down looking at the headwinds and tailwinds. Clearly, if you look at the composition of our balance sheet over the last 3 years, so as of June, our balance sheet on MFI is about 22%, what used to be 27%. And obviously, there is an increase correspondingly in the MSME and in the consumer area. So I think we've been able to navigate that pretty efficiently and have demonstrated that resilience and performance and the strength of character to use that knowledge to accelerate and to moderate where we have to. And that's really the way to look at it, to my mind, is to look at the risk-adjusted spreads or risk-adjusted return we are able to make. So if you look at a risk-adjusted return on a year-on-year basis, they've improved from 690 basis point to about 740 basis point. That's about 50 basis point improvement. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and wish you luck.
Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question is from the line of Yash with Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Hi, hi sir. Thanks for taking my question. Hopping on the MFI point once again. Is the over-leveraging problem slightly more divergent than what we would have anticipated earlier, or you know, from the earlier color which we would have got? And second, mostly on the given the two different sources of originating our MFI portfolio, do we have more divergence in the asset quality between the MFI loans originated from two different sources? And so lastly, on how do we see the composition of the book going forward, given MSME is doing well, MFI, we have the ability to accelerate or slow down, and on the consumer finance being the new segment? So these are the questions.
No, thank you very much. I'm going to request my colleague Partha Sarthi, the risk head, to give you a lot more insights into this. Partha, over to you.
Thanks, Ashish. As Ashish alluded to earlier, post the RBI changing certain norms for the microfinance sector in October 22, it is true that the sector saw some amount of exuberance, and there was significant increase in leveraging at the individual borrower level on account of multiple loans coming in, etc. And this is slightly different from the issues that we used to see in microfinance sector earlier, which were more localized events on account of natural calamities or socio-political events. To that extent, this is more like a issue which happens across the country. I mean, this is obviously across the country, though in certain pockets you would see this a lot more than the other. We have data, we have analysis to support as to which are the geographies where the over leveraging is more and where it is less. So we carefully choose the geographies. The way we will look at it, this is something which is being trying to be brought down under control by various partners, whether it is the microfinance organizations like Sazan and MFIN, or most of the lenders. This is the way we look at it. This is going to be a couple of quarters more. That is one. In coming to our book, as you mentioned, this is our book is a combination of both intermediate retail and direct retail. We have been cautious on the direct retail microfinance exposures, and we have been maintaining our AUM and prudently providing. On the intermediate retail book, we are reasonably comfortable. So that is as far as microfinance is concerned. I don't really see it in terms of the overall stress. While there is going to be stress in the sector, the way we manage risk, I think it is manageable. In terms of the book mix, one of the advantages that we have as a company is the diversification of our businesses, whether it is MSME, microfinance, consumer finance, vehicle finance, affordable housing, agri. We are able to dial up and dial down these sectors. The sectoral mix is something that we play, and as a consequence of which, you will see the sectoral mix changing in line with the emerging economic trends. That's something that we actively manage. Consumer finance, again, the way we manage that business, we do not have much of direct retail consumer finance. It is actually partnership-based and intermediate retail, and where we have ways to mitigate risk by way of the structures with which we operate. Because of which, while the sector might see some credit losses, we should be able to manage it in our book. That is broadly how we manage exposures, and we should, that because of the diversification benefit, we should get consistent and predictable best-in-the-class results.
Got it. Thank you, sir. And just lastly, do we see credit costs settling around the levels of 170 basis points, or it should come down as we go forward into the financial year?
I would not want to treat it as a guidance. As mentioned, in this year, first quarter is typically where we make more changes to the ECL models, etc. Every year, we review all the models and make changes where necessary. The first quarter credit cost of 1.7% includes more than close to 50 bps of the model change impact. So obviously 1.2 was pretty much in line with what is last year. The way we look at it, this is a environment where there is stress, so it's difficult to give any guidance on the credit cost, but the risk mitigation that we have available with us is something which should help us to maintain credit cost within the reasonable levels.
So safe to say this includes about 60 basis points of good book provisioning.
Right.
You wanted to ensure that the model reflects the current challenges. So as a prudent financier, we need to ensure we appropriately do with our models to ensure we have sufficient coverage. And the PCR of over 74%, that ensures that you're pretty well provided as you navigate through the times. And, you know, obviously, if you look at it over a 2-3 year basis, we'll significantly look superior versus a peer, both on GNPA and NPA. Thank you.
Got it. Thank you, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one. The next question is from the line of Prince Chaudhary with PINC Wealth. Please go ahead.
Hi. I have a couple of questions. First, continuing with the previous partner question, it is related to what led to increase in over-leverage in microfinance and also what RBI norms were changing. So if you can brief on that.
Oh, I will request Father to break on that.
Yeah.
But, you know, one has to be prudent to look at it. There is a bit of over-leveraging. Also, there is a deregulation and interest rate. Correct? You might want to cover both.
Yeah. So there were significant changes, but the two main ones were number one, the interest rate cap being lifted. The second and more important one is the number of microfinance loans which an individual borrower can have was earlier restricted to two. NBFC MFI loans was restricted to two. That restriction was taken off, though the industry could have been prudent. And for the last 6 months, they have been now pretty prudent. Which is really the reason why which led to multiple loans to the same borrower at the which are outstanding at the same point of time, which is the over leverage.
All right. And if you can brief overview about your two types of business model, like you provide directly and through the intermediate partner. So if you can just think about cost breakup or what you do actually over there.
The way we work on intermediate retail is what we provide is facilities which are for our partners, for them to onlend. We call them as loans to originate, where we provide an NBFC a loan and a particular set of criteria through which they can disburse loans, and we take specific charge on those identified assets and track them month on month. That is how intermediate retail works. Although obviously there will be a cover typically for a 1 rupee loan that we give might have between 1.2 to 1.25x cover, which actually gives us the cushion.
Yeah, actually, the more importantly, look at it, you lever the knowledge of the credit needs of these customers, their behavior, their performance, and you are able to deliver it across the sector and then build the right set of proposition, complementing, collaborating. And I use collaboration at least 5 times in my speech. To ensure we are able to address the need of this large demand or the large underserved community in India. And I think the diversification creates a significant power to the franchise in terms of resilience and consistency of performance, which in a sense reflects, if you look at it on a risk-adjusted basis, like I said, if you look at our performance and risk-adjusted returns, actually improved by 50 basis points over last year. It shows that if you're able to lever the knowledge and able to deliver, live to the diversification and leverage your capabilities, you are able to address the needs in a very efficient, reliable, and responsible manner. And, yeah, that's all. Thanks.
All right. That's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Hardik Shah from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. So can you throw some light on the FLDG arrangements that you would have in intermediate lending across products? More from the commercials point of view, I want to understand what would be the risk that would be sitting on your balance sheet, for example, for the MFI book, because you mentioned that you're comfortable with the intermediate lending and you've dialed down on your own books. I want to understand the divergence there.
The way it actually works is the FLDG arrangements are with the partnership-based lending, and that is available only in digital lending partnerships as per the RBI guidelines. We try to ensure that the portfolio that is originated is within that FLDG that is available.
Yeah, we actually select each customer. So, you know, end of the day, the first port of call is whom to lend, how much to lend, and at what price to lend. The application can come from anyone. And how do we connect with those customers and how do we fulfill becomes the core of it. The DLG guidelines provide you cushion to enable the flow of credit to these sectors, but the customer selection is obviously lender's prerogative. So as long as you are pretty sharp and you're able to use your knowledge and your scorecards, hopefully you should get the right set of outcomes.
No, so if the customer that is being lent through intermediate lending were to default, what is the risk that lies with you and what lies with the lender? If you could help us understand with an example.
So I think the way to look at it, first, the intermediate retail is when we lend money to the lender to lend money onward to their customers basis pre-agreed risk criteria and the pre-agreed target client model. When we do something like this, we know how will the pen profile of the end customer will be and what kind of loss rate will it come with. Northern Arc, obviously, because we are enabling that credit, has the pool which is beyond what we would have financed. So our first way out is cash flow from the loans. The second way out is from the security. The third way out is overall cash flows of the company. So we are pretty well covered in that way.
Okay. No, still not clear. So if 100 rupees of lending and if...
So if we've agreed to lend 100 rupees to certain profile of customers, knowing those spend profile of end customers, we know what loss rate will happen. Using that, we will have 110 or 120 rupees of that pool against which we would have enabled for us to finance about 100 rupees. Yeah, our cash flow will come from the loans we finance. Otherwise, from the overall pool of 120 rupees of pool, or from the overall, which is anyway charged to us or hypothecated to us, or from the overall cash flow of the company. So there is first way, second way, third way, and a fourth way out for us.
Okay. Got it.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Praveen Agarwal with Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Am I audible?
Yes, Praveen.
Yeah, thanks a lot. So just needed some color in terms of the liabilities franchise that you have built. We are not seeing any great improvement in the cost of borrowings, which is still sticking around at 9.3%. Despite we seeing multiple ratings upgrade. So we wanted some thoughts over there that how is the incremental cost of borrowing behaving for us? And secondly, sure. In terms of liability mix, how is the mix shaping up for us? And if you can give us some color in terms of the liquidity on books for us at this moment.
Okay, thanks. We'll request Atul to take it, please.
Yeah. Thanks, Praveen. So I think diversification of our liability franchise is something that we have been working upon for the last 4 years. And, currently the share of the banks has been coming down for us from a level of close to 70% to now close to 60%. I think the biggest achievement for us is the share of the offshore lending, as Ashish mentioned in his speech, that, the offshore or the multilaterals and the DFIs are the first port of call whenever they want to put money in India. So I think we have been able to grow that size pretty well with over 30% from the offshore route. As far as the cost of fund is concerned, I think, Praveen, we have been, smartly able to bring down this cost from a level of 11% in FY21 to currently at close to 9% in spite of 250 basis points increase in the repo rate in the last 2 years. Even in the last 6 months, RBI has increased the risk rate for the NBFC exposure. We have seen tight liquidity conditions. But in spite of that, our cost of fund is quite stable at 9.3%. To your second question on the liquidity, I think we have a positive, cumulative mismatch in all the time buckets. Liquidity, we are very, very comfortable. We are subjected to the LCR guidelines of RBI, and we maintain HQLA, which is even higher than what is been prescribed. Debt equity is also very comfortable for us. It is currently, as on June, it is at 3.2 times. But now with the further IPO money, it should come down below 3 times. We had the rating upgrade earlier last year. I think now the new route of the capital market should also open up now that we are in the AA category. Liquidity-wise, we maintain close to 5 to 6% of our assets, in the form of liquid assets. That's readily available at any given point of time. So I hope this answers your questions.
Yeah, just one follow-up. What would be the fully hedged cost in terms of ECBs for us?
So, in the current year, we have borrowed from two multilaterals, and in both the cases, our fully hedged cost, all-inclusive landed cost for us is less than 9%.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press *1. The next question is from the line of Siddharth Bauman with Citibank. Please go ahead.
Yes. So, first of all, congratulations on the first set of results after listing. I'm Siddharth from Citibank. My question is around the upcoming rate cut scenario. How well do you see yourself placed in comparison with other NBFCs to benefit from the rate cuts?
Yeah.
Atul, over to you.
Sure. We just spoke about the liability franchise. So, on the liabilities front, we have close to 65 to 70% of our total borrowings, which are floating in nature. The ones that are not floating are mainly the offshore ones, which are, as I mentioned, fully hedged, and it's a fixed rate to us. But this 65 to 70% is completely floating, linked to various benchmarks, including MCLR, including repo. So once the downward trend starts, I think we should easily get the benefit in a decreasing interest rate scenario. On the asset front, I think around 35 to 40% of our total assets are floating, and they are linked to our internal benchmark rates, and that is subject to the interest rate sensitivity.
The fixed rate loan tenor is also quite small, so we will be able to reprice the asset book.
Yeah,
quite
well. Correct.
Good. Siddharth, do you have more questions?
Thanks. No.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Vikas Jain with Reliance Securities. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, sir. Congratulations for the good set of numbers. So now with the IPO money being raised, so what would be the incremental growth going forward, sir, over the next few quarters? No doubt you have mentioned that the second quarter also looks pretty good. But what would be the guidance going forward for the next two or three quarters to look at?
Hey, good morning.
Compared to the industry, how better we are, as you said, that we are better than the industry in terms of your set of line of business. So what would be the incremental growth rate compared to the industry?
I think if you look at it, past 3 years, we've been growing at about 30 plus percent of CAGR. I think we've demonstrated our ability, given the power of diversification and our focused approach in sector, for us to follow the similar kind of growth rate. obviously there will be levels of moderation and calibration both in with regards to sector and exposure as we go through the current times. But obviously you will see expansion in the return of assets both on account of incremental equity infusion which has happened in the company and the way the product mix has evolved. I also believe the further expansion will also will witness, given that the business seasonality of the business, the demand of credit picks up towards the H2 with the advent of festival seasons and so on and so forth. So I think we are pretty confident of where we stand today, and as we look forward, we should be able to deliver in line with our performance, what we've demonstrated over the last 3 years.
Better than the what you have demonstrated, say 40% CAGR in terms of profitability. So it would be a higher number than that or below number?
Yeah, I think it's too early for me to comment on in the first call. Thank you.
No issues.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. As there are no further questions, I now hand the conference over to Ashish for closing comments.
Thank you all. Rinesh, thank you for putting this together. Thank you all for joining. We're really delighted to have this engaging conversation. I'm sure a lot of discussion is an opportunity for us to learn and improve ourselves. Like I said, we are pretty focused every day on doing better than what we did yesterday. Thank you all. Have a fabulous week. Wishing you festival seasons ahead. Season's greeting for it. Thank you all.